Thank you all for joining today's podcast. With me here, I have Shah Idathum Parampil, who is a CDIO at Baptist Health of South Florida. Today, we are going to talk about his journey, his experience, and the transformation of technology and technology-led outcomes for Baptist Health of South Florida. Shah, thank you very much for taking time out from your busy schedule and sharing your insights with us.
Thank you so much for having me. This is great to be here.
So, Shah, one of the first questions is, you've been in the space for quite a while now, and you are leading the transformation at Baptist Health. What has been your overall experience? And from the business perspective, from professional perspective, and from the personal angle, how enlightening and satisfying this journey has been so far at Baptist Health?
I don't know about enlightening. It has suddenly been intense. I think, look, if you take a look at the last 20, 30 years, the speed at which things are changing, it's only accelerating, right? So to things starting to, you know, in the early 20s, things were changing every few years. Now it's every few weeks and potentially even days. So from that perspective, being able to stay on top of it yourself, and then be of support to all the other stakeholders within the ecosystem, within, like in my case, all of the different clinical, operational, as well as administrative partners and stakeholders. It's been super intense. And I think that's what most leaders are feeling right now. It's also exciting in that it makes a positive impact on the life of the patients, of the providers, and so on. So overall, I feel super excited and energized by what's going on right now in the industry.
Yeah. So, Shah, you mentioned that the technology shift has been rapid now, right? With going from years to months to now weeks.
Yeah.
And we talked earlier, you mentioned the amount of AI that you yourself are testing and trying just to educate yourself and the adoption of AI in the space. Regardless of slow transformation or fast, what are the core principles that you apply in your business, in your practice, to really drive measurable outcomes?
I think that's a great question. So as a technologist, there are certain foundational things that you have to do. You need to have the right infrastructure for it. You need to have the right systems, engineering, any and all of those types of things, which is not just true for the current sort of AI disruptions. Any technology disruption, you need to make sure your foundation is in good shape. So that's certainly one thing. But where this phase is different compared to some of the previous waves of technology disruption is that you're also having to upskill your workforce, not just technology, but also clinical, operational, administrative, in ways that you didn't have to before. Previously, as an example, you could do a quarterly training session or even monthly training session. As we discussed earlier, that's no longer a real feasible thing, because by the time you're getting out of a training, the technology has already moved forward.
Yeah.
So I think being able to upskill and keep all of your workforce, not just technology, up to date with these transformative new technologies is one major thing that we are having to invest and think carefully about. The other piece of it is really the governance of it, right? As such, if you look at AI as a technology or a way of doing things, it is non-deterministic by nature, right? Which means you need to have the right guardrails in place. AI governance, people talk a lot about AI governance, which is absolutely true. But how you implement that is not an easy thing to do.
Yep.
Meaning you have to make sure that there is sufficient oversight and inputs from essentially all of the different stakeholders in the ecosystem. So from a healthcare provider perspective, in addition to making sure you have the right technology foundation, those are the two things that stand out: upskilling or help literacy at the workforce level, and then having the right governance in place for us to be able to assess, rapidly adopt, and then operate these things at scale.
Yeah. And again, we see this as commonly a challenge, right? There are organizations very forward-looking. The challenge is not about implementation, it's about adoption at scale, right? And especially turning the traditional workers into, you know, AI-enabled workers, you know, at every stage of the organization, from supply chain to, you know, nurses to clinicians to, you know, systems of record that are there. So I see that you are spearheading right now a major transformation for Epic, right? Lot of inefficiencies are there, you know, across the healthcare provider space, right? While Epic is leading forward with a lot of transformation internally within the platform, they have announced a lot of AI features and functionality. How do you see that transformation of Epic alone impacting the digital transformation journey of Baptist? And what are the things that you're doing beyond Epic, right? So peripheral systems and systems of record that you are implementing AI for. So what has been a direct visible impact so far, and what do you foresee that it will create?
So a couple of different things, if you will. So we selected Epic after a very thorough and careful analysis over a period of time. And we looked at not just their current capabilities, but also their roadmap, as well as their ability to invest in new capabilities for the foreseeable future. And AI is a big part of it. And one of our guiding principles have been to take advantage of the foundation system or the foundational EHR system as much as we can, which means a couple of different things. Obviously, you don't customize the application. You stay to as close to the foundation as possible. What that then allows you to do is a couple of different things. A, you stay close to the foundation, your ability to train your workforce, your ability to run this on a scalable basis, all of that improves because you are able to use the tools and capabilities that are inherent to the Epic ecosystem. The second thing is, from a technology perspective, it gives you a lot more bandwidth to be able to invest in finding all the other capabilities that need to complement Epic, right? Whereas when you have a bunch of customizations, you're constantly chasing your tail, so to speak, trying to keep up with maintenance and support and so on and so forth. So foundational EHR system and staying as close to that as possible has been our number one guiding principle. The second thing is really working really closely with Epic, who seems to have or has the sort of the best practice and standard data from the industry. They have the vast majority of the health systems on their platform. So they are able to advise us and guide us in terms of what are the best ways to structure these workflows. Right, so they give us options and we are able to pick from it. So between those two aspects of it, using the foundation and taking advantage of Epic's existing expertise in figuring out what the most optimal workflows are, I think we are making faster progress than, and really more stable progress than we would have otherwise.
Got it. So tapping on to that same topic, now let's say systems are modernized. You have Epic and peripheral systems. If you were to say the low-hanging fruits with use of Gen AI and agentic AI, like key use cases that you've successfully delivered or you're looking to deliver, like top five use cases, the easy ones that can have a direct impact on the business.
I think the number one thing is, and you know this, provider assistance, right? So there aren't enough providers to care for all the patients that we have. There is a physician shortage, similarly for nursing as well. So ambient listening, as well as all the clinical assistance tools are, I think at this point, table stakes, right? So so that's one. Automating workflows that cut across different core systems and domains. Scheduling as an example, right? You're going from front of the office, which is the call center, to say, arguably the back office, which is rough cycle and prior authorizations and so on. So being able to put in place automated workflows, leveraging agentic capabilities, allow you to maximize your utilization, especially in things like imaging, right? So one of the biggest areas of frustration for patients is when you need an urgent study or a test and you can't get it. So using AI and automated workflows, we are able to make meaningful dents there. In the future, as you, and there are other capabilities as well, especially within technology, you know, observability, as you know, or optimizing your workflows within the technology ecosystem, including IT service management. I think that's a great opportunity as well for teams to take advantage of. What I am really looking forward to, though, is clinical decision support and assistance, yes. Right? So Epic has a set of capabilities in their roadmap, which I think is starting to now come out on a GA basis. But I think that's going to make a significant difference to the providers, right? Yeah. So they're able to do things faster, see more patients. I think is going to make the most difference when you look at the next year or two.
Yeah, the fatigue and the burnout is a real problem, right? Yeah. And we see that happening across the systems. If I were to ask you and say, AI implementation and AI adoption are the two, you know, challenges that we see today. And you know, I think you're doing fairly well with that. What sort of data challenges that you encounter? Because again, it's never an AI or an outcome problem. It's always a data problem. And in healthcare, as you know, there's a fragmented systems and, you know, lack of unified data platform and the access management and variety of problems. So what were the top five or top three issues you encountered that you were able to cope with and to deliver this meaningful AI?
Great question. So I think, look, as with most things, garbage in, garbage out,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
You have to make sure your data is of good quality, mm-hmm. which is not, in my opinion, a data management problem alone. Data management plays a part, right?
Yeah.
So your pipelines have to be good. You have to have quality controls and checks and so on. But if the data wasn't input correctly to begin with, to fix that at ETL time, as an example, is going to be a huge undertaking. So data quality, taking it all the way to the beginning, shifting left as we talk in tech, I think is a big aspect of it. The second thing is the velocity, right? How quickly can you get the data? Now, let's say predictive capabilities, predictive models, not even AI, just classic machine learning stuff. If you have data close to real time, the quality of prediction is going to be more accurate and more relevant to your operation.
Yeah.
So speed and relevancy or currency of data, I think, is super important. And then the third thing is security, right? HIPAA on the one side, but really being able to securely make all of this data available at runtime, at inference time to these models. Different platforms perform differently in that area, but I think that's a significant area of focus as well. In our case, fortunately, we had invested in sort of the right tooling and platform and governance and due diligence around all three areas over the past 5 years. So we came in kind of prepared into this wave over the last year or so. So that has helped us, but it is an ongoing focus. All it takes is a few weeks or a few months of taking eyes off the ball and suddenly you are in a bit of a mess.
Yeah. So you touched upon cybersecurity, right?
Yeah.
One of the key topics now. And again, coming from cybersecurity background, I see today healthcare is the most attacked vertical, right? And healthcare is generally behind on the technology adoption curve, especially the bleeding edge stuff, right? Now, this Gen AI and agentic AI is there. There's a lot of pressure to improve functionality across the board, right? How do you think the cybersecurity challenge is going to impact the speed of innovation and adoption at scale from the patient to physician to nurses to clinicians to overall business? What's your thought on the anxiety over cybersecurity with especially the sprawl of AI in the system?
Look, I think when we start off having that conversation, if you're starting from a bit of a deficit, the number one thing you look for is the technology and the tooling around cybersecurity. But as you fix that issue, right, which is really prevention oriented, you put a lot of tools in place, monitoring included, but also threat monitoring, threat intelligence, any and all of those. And it's a very, very layered approach.
Yeah.
Right? You have safety net after safety net. But once you get past that, you very quickly realize all of those tools can help to an extent. But if your workforce isn't aware,
yes,
and they get phished or otherwise duped or tricked into giving away the credentials, you suddenly have a problem. So at that point, then you start focusing on educating your workforce about the importance of cybersecurity.
Yes.
Beyond that, though, then you realize, resilience is important. Should something happen, it doesn't have to be the hospital system being breached, mm-hmm. right? It could be anyone in the ecosystem. Supply chain risk is a huge problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
So being able to have business continuity plans that are constantly tested and up to scratch, I think is, so all of those, and there is more, but all of those components are the, again, the foundational aspects of it. But what makes AI and Gen AI, especially from an agentic perspective, different is that the access control for agents is still not sorted, right? At a high level, we talk about MCP and A2A and those types of capabilities, but it is still not sorted. So there is a lot of effort and work that still needs to happen, certainly at the time of implementation of these capabilities within the system, but also at the ecosystem level from partners like yourself, as well as product companies that are bringing these forward. They need to think through that a little bit as well. Yeah. To help us all out.
For healthcare life science specifically, we have an approach about built-in security versus bolted-on security, right? Today, most organizations we see, they are still hung up on, hey, let's buy another tool, let's buy another product, and let's plug the Band-Aid. If you don't change it systematically, it will be a problem long-term. And what we predict is that the adoption of agentic AI today in applications world, you are looking at 2,000 applications, 3,000 applications with the agents. We are talking about few million agents in very short period of time. So built-in security at every layer, infrastructure, application, data, model, AI, I think that's going to be a game changer and key adoption criteria for every health system.
Absolutely. And look, and you know this, which is the agents are automating a lot more of the exposed surface area. So it behooves us all to really pay attention to the resilience and the business continuity aspect of it. Let's say, security or otherwise, these agents were not available from a technology perspective. Outage, yeah. Let's just say. Cable cut.
Yeah.
Right? Does your workforce or your operators know how to operate in an environment once all these agents are up and running when those agents are not available? Which is a significant undertaking. So as we build these capabilities, we need to start thinking in terms of air resilience and business continuity, right? So to your point, security tooling prevention is just scratching the surface. That's just the first level. But resilience and business continuity is really where everyone needs to focus on, especially as they're entering the agentic age.
So Shah, I do this with all the CXOs that I meet with, and generally, I'm a seeker, so I learn from the leaders like yourself. If you were to make prediction or make a strategic bet on where the world will be 3 years from now, 5-7 years is too far, 3 years from now, if you were to talk about enterprise AI, right, workforce productivity and all the tools and solutions that are there, and how employees will work differently, how the services will be delivered. What's your prediction in that space for enterprise AI?
I think from the perspective of looking at this, like especially administrative stuff in the clinical and non-clinical world, in the provider space, I think is going to get automated at a scale that we've not really even fully appreciate just as yet. And it won't be automating the existing workflows. Chances are we will see capabilities that come to market that sort of completely automates the process of the workflow end to end. Today we are automating things, you know, the 10 steps, we automate the 10. I think we are going to see a world where the entire work, you know, one shot automation, right? Instead of having to, that I think opens up a level of, I don't know, capacity, bandwidth, ability to focus for the critical staff or the subject matter experts. And whoever takes advantage of that available capacity and bandwidth that's going to come available, I think stands, you know, in good stead in terms of taking their business to the next level. We don't know what's happening, right? This could accelerate to a point where, you know, there's a lot of talk about AGI, ASI, keeping all of that aside. I think if you just focus on the basics, which is one-shot automation, is your workforce prepared for it? Are you, as a system, from a business perspective, ready to take advantage of all that capacity and available opportunity. I think that's where this is going. Yep.
Would you be comfortable a robot performing surgery on you 5 years from now?
That's a great question. The simple answer is yes. But it also depends on like something routine these days. Yeah. So LASIK, as an example, right? It started off as a very, imagine a machine in your eyes, right? It was a big problem. But today no one even thinks about, right, that being an issue. So I think over time, in the next couple of years, especially with humanoid bots coming sort of more into the mainstream, I think we'll start seeing more and more of that. Because think about it, we have a real issue with physician-surgeon shortage. Any healthcare profession, there's a shortage. So starting with, you know, underserved, underprivileged communities world over, chances are, just like a lot of other technologies, you will see in Asia and Africa, people start taking advantage, and that'll prove the business case of the safety and quality before, you know, highly regulated markets like the US. And I think that's where this is going. So I would be, but like with most things, the proof is in the pudding, right? So the data that backs up the safety and quality of these procedures, I think, is what everyone would look for.
Yeah. So Sha, I want to wrap up this with a gratefulness message. As we all know, right, that patient care and what we all are set to do out there, it's not possible without the ground staff, the people who are actually providing the care and making things happen, from nurses to physicians to clinicians to paramedics to, you know, the MIS staff, right, or clinical IT staff. What would be your message or, you know, your gratefulness or your message to this community, especially let's start with the nurses. They are the backbone of our system. So what would be your message to them?
Look, whichever way you look at it, all of us, technology, IT, whatever you want to call it, exist to support the providers that actually provide care for the patients.
Yes.
And that's something that is foremost in our minds as we go through all this transformation. To me, any provider, if you take a big step back and look at it from their lens, their perspective, we are all excited about technology. We are all trained to adopt, right, technology, whatever comes out latest and greatest. We are the first one to, as technologists, jump into it and say we should look at it. Look at it from their perspective, though, right? They don't have enough time in their day. We aren't producing enough nurses and doctors, or any provider for that matter, to support the demand that's out there. So, and we are throwing all these things at them. So the number one thing that we need to be grateful for and thankful towards is the provider community.
Yep.
Nurses, doctors, radiologists, the entire workforce that are patient facing. Yep. That's really my view of it, right? So we really have to be thankful to what they do on a day in and day out basis, despite all this disruption that is being thrown at them on an ongoing basis. Yes.
Look, when there was a COVID times, we were all behind the computer at our home.
Yeah.
They were the ones who were standing in the emergency rooms and caring for the patient. So,
that's exactly Sha,
thank you very much for insightful conversation. Many more to go. I would thank you for sharing your thoughts and how the healthcare leaders should get inspired by your words. So thank you very much for taking this time. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on this podcast. As Sha mentioned, right, the way we are looking at patient care and patient experience and patient outcomes, the future looks bright. While there are micro and macroeconomic and political issues that are there in the country, end of the day, it's the leaders who are going to drive the change. It is all on us to provide the best care to the patients and provide the better patient outcomes. With help of technology, AI is there to enable and improve the care. So thank you all for listening in.